Hello, and welcome to Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. I'm Gina Briner, Editor-in-Chief of Live Science.
And I'm Mindy Weisberger, a senior writer at Live Science. The world can be a pretty mysterious place, and we at Live Science love to ask and answer questions about mysteries big and small, about ancient civilizations, our planet and solar system, the plants and animals that live alongside us, our bodies and how they work, and technologies that we use every day.
Each episode of this podcast introduces three mysterious questions, and we think the answers will really surprise you.
We'll also hear from scientists who are performing cutting-edge research in labs and in fieldwork around the world to answer these and other intriguing scientific questions.
In today's episode of Life's Little Mysteries, we'll take a closer look at a mysterious bodily function that is as fascinating as it is gross, and that's poop.
Poop is probably one of those topics that people don't talk about much. And I should qualify that outside of the Live Science newsroom, because we talk about it all the time.
Or with our five-year-old kids.
Well, yeah, sure. And with great enthusiasm. But for many people, they just don't talk about poop in so-called polite society because it's considered kind of gross.
But when you start to think about it, and we have here at Life Science,
think about it all the
poop
time.
Poop is a pretty interesting topic, you know?
Right. Well, just about every living thing does it, from enormous animals to even
itsy bitsy
microbes, the microbes like tardigrades.
Oh, yeah, they poop, and their poops are big. We'll find out about
later. We'll talk about that later, yeah.
And poop is important for everyday gut health for humans and all animals.
Right, right. There are clues in poop about your digestive health and whether or not you're suffering from a digestive disorder. And actually, as speaking of disorders, poop can actually contain gut microbes that can be used to treat some kinds of disorders.
Poop can also play an important role in ecosystems and animal diets. It provides essential nutrients that benefit organisms of, you know, from the itty-bitty microbes to humans to elephants.
And some animals even, you know, do eat poop. And
that's right.
That's something else we're going to talk about later today.
Yay.
And there's so much science in poop. It's not just that it's fun to talk about. There's actually a lot of science.
And we have fossilized poop actually has a name. It's called coprolites. And
right.
Scientists can study this poop from, you know, thousands of years ago to learn things about humans, about animals.
And there's even poop that goes back farther than that. So there is poop that is millions and hundreds of millions of years old, such as fossilized shark poop dating to 270 million years ago that still contains tapeworm eggs.
One of the eggs of this larva that the scientists found actually still had little tiny hooks that were attached to the intestinal walls.
That's so amazing. So they're looking in something that a shark pooped out 270 million years ago, and there's this tiny little parasitic organism inside, and they can still see the structures in that organism. That's just amazing.
And that it has claws, which is crazy.
Right. And this actually is important for understanding the evolution of tapeworms that are still around today. So, you know, they're not just getting evidence from this about this ancient shark, but about parasitic animals that have, you know, that have lived off of other animals for hundreds of millions of years.
And they've even found poop going back 500 million years. Scientists found a sea worm basically left its poop in a burrow, then ventured out of its burrow under the sea, and this was 500 million years ago. That poop then became a feast for shelled critters around there, and apparently scientists found these organisms, and inside they had preserved this sort of poop buffet in their guts.
That's just amazing. And so, but animals that are alive today also have a lot of information that they can share with scientists in their poop. And wombats are actually my favorite example, just because their poop comes out in these perfect little cubes. How could a mammal poop out a cube? But actually,
scientists have figured this out, right?
It's pretty amazing. So it actually, like, the partly digested material travels through their intestines. It gradually solidifies as it gets, you know, towards the end of its journey. And there are parts of the intestinal walls that are more elastic than others, and they compress it, and so it creates these perfect little cubes that they then poop out.
And one interesting thing about the wombat poop, because I think this is incredible as well. Wombats, apparently they don't see or hear very well, so they leave stacks, and cubes are easier to stack than, you know, poop, that other shaped poop. And right. so they stack it in different places and it helps guide them around. And I guess they also put it sometimes big piles outside of where their territory is to say basically, hey, I'm here mm-hmm. to other that's, stumbling around wombats.
That's amazing. Yeah. So they stack their poo as little signposts.
And some animals actually throw poop.
Yes. Well, anybody who's ever been to a zoo has probably witnessed that at in the primate section.
That's right. Chimps seem to, well, all chimps follow a social hierarchy, and some of them communicate this dominance or annoyance with other chimpanzees by throwing things. And at some zoos, apparently, chimps are actually, the thing they're choosing to throw is poop. And
well, it's, you know, there's plenty of it. It's close at hand. It's easy to throw. So, and yeah, and they sometimes throw it at visitors, too.
Yeah.
I have seen that firsthand.
You
actually.
Have?
I have, yes. It's, well, you know, and I took, my son is now 17, but I took him to the zoo once when he was about 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And we saw a chimp throw poo, and he talked about it nonstop for like the next 3 years.
Oh, of course. Yeah. poop talk doesn't stop for quite some time.
Right. And we talked about tardigrades earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Now, tardigrades, of course, they're microscopic, these microscopic organisms that are also known as water bears. And but for their, you know, for all their small size, they make these enormous poops that are about 1/3 of their body length. And people have actually captured this on video. And it is a sight to see.
Yeah, it looks almost like there's another tardigrade inside its belly, but it's poop.
But it's just a very large poop.
White rhinos also seem to communicate through poop. They have communal piles of poop, and they sort of serve as social networks.
Or, you know, people sometimes say that social networks on social media is a pile of poop. Except if you're a rhino, that's kind of literal.
Apparently,
yeah, yeah. So poop is a part of life for humans and other animals, and there are plenty of mysteries surrounding this sometime taboo topic. While we know that everybody poops, the experience is not the same for everyone. And when you do it, where you do it, how often you do it is something that can vary greatly from person to person. But one thing that many people have in common is that pooping often comes after something they do every morning, drinking coffee, which is kind of counterintuitive, right? I mean,
you would think caffeine is dehydrating, so why would it make a person poop?
Right, because caffeine is something that's mildly dehydrating. It makes your kidneys flush extra sodium and water from your body, so you would think that that would actually prevent you from pooping. But instead, about 30% of people experience a laxative effect from coffee.
And that brings us to our first mystery today, which is,
why does coffee make you poop?
So what is going on? Like, what's happening inside the body after I, you know, drink half my coffee and have to go to the bathroom?
This is a question that has fascinated people for decades. And research from the 1990s found that when some people drink coffee, they experience a response in the gastrointestinal system just within minutes. And so they hypothesized that coffee somehow affects the epithelial tissue. And this is the outermost layer of cells lining the stomach, the small intestine. And this stimulates a response to coffee within minutes. And then they also found that coffee promotes the release of hormones that are linked to digestion and therefore pooping. So there's something, and this is a bit of a mouthful. There's a hormone called cholecystokinin, and this stimulates the digestion of fat and protein. And then there's another hormone called gastrin, which is produced in the stomach and is known to increase contractions in the colon, and that, which is, of course, the long coiled organ that extracts water from digested food. And these contractions are called peristalsis. They evacuate waste from the body. And the gastrin-producing activity that scientists saw after coffee drinking was in the part of the colon that was closest to the rectum. And so the researchers concluded that increased activity there could promote the laxative effect that you see when some people drink coffee.
So it's both the hormones that are released and then something that's triggering this epithelial tissue.
Well, the epithelial tissue thing is they saw that it was absorbed very quickly there.
Okay.
And then they also saw that it stimulated hormone production of those two hormones, gastrin and cholecystokinin.
If we're talking about coffee here, is the thing that triggers this the caffeine in coffee?
Well, at the time of the study, they weren't sure, but they did see a similar motor response in the colon in study subjects who also drank decaf. So that told the scientists that whatever's in the coffee that's causing the poop response, it's probably not the caffeine.
Wow, that's really interesting because, I mean, it really is with coffee. So I'm just surprised they didn't find this with caffeine. Also, if it were caffeine, wouldn't we see the same thing in energy drinks and sodas?
Right. Yeah, we would. So there are plenty of drinks that are out there that have caffeine in them too. And while there it's generally assumed like, you know, that yes, coffee is linked to having to, you know, having to go to the bathroom to poop, it's not something that you hear people talking about when they talk about having energy drinks or soda. So no, probably not the caffeine.
So what else could it be? What are scientists looking at?
Well, one possibility is the acidity of coffee. There's a compound in coffee plants called chlorogenic acid, and this increases the production of gastric acid and increases just overall stomach acid levels. And of course, more acids, which help break down food, could make the stomach empty out into the intestines much faster than usual.
And there was an interesting discovery last year that involved rat poop that might help to answer this question.
Right. There were these are preliminary results that were published in the journal Digestive Disease Week in May of 2019. And so they went looking for answers about the relationship between coffee and poop in rats. So they gave rats coffee.
I can just picture the little the baby mugs.
Tiny little rats sitting around like holding tiny little mugs of coffee.
You gotta have a newspaper.
Right. And a toilet, of course.
Yeah.
So you have this like, you know, a rat coffee clutch. They're sitting around drinking coffee for 3 days. And what they found out, this confirmed the findings of prior studies that coffee stimulated contractions in the small intestine. But they also found something new. This was something that hadn't been done before. They looked at the rat poop to see if the coffee had an impact on the microbes, on the gut microbes. And so they saw that there were less overall bacteria in the coffee drinking rats' poop compared to the rats that in the control group that had not been drinking coffee, the abstaining rats. And to test that, they took rat poo and they immersed it in like a coffee bath, and they saw that also lowered the amount of bacteria, and that happened regardless of whether it was caffeinated coffee or decaf. So once again, it looks like whatever it is in coffee that is linked to pooping, it's probably not the caffeine.
And more it seems like scientists really are finding the importance of this microbiome, the biome in guts. I mean, this is with rats, but it's just an interesting piece of information. And so why is it so hard for them to pin down what's actually causing the coffee poop mechanism?
Well, because there are so many compounds in coffee. There are over 1,000 compounds, and that makes it really tricky to isolate which one is directly responsible for the pooping. So for now, even though we know that for about 30% of people, drinking coffee is going to lead to pooping, why exactly it does is still a mystery. At the beginning of this episode, we spoke about some of the many practical applications for poop, some of which you may have heard of before. But here's one that you probably don't know about: freezing poop to make a knife that's sharp enough to butcher an animal. The source of this dubious claim is an anecdote that's infamous among anthropologists. And last year, a team of scientists decided to put poop to the test and see if it could make the cut. Joining me today to talk about that is Metin Erin, assistant professor at Kent State University in Ohio and co-director of the university's Erin Laboratory of Experimental Archaeology. Dr. Erin is also the lead author of the study that made and tested the frozen poop knife. Dr. Erin, thanks for being here today. First, can you tell us a little about your lab and explain what exactly it means to conduct experimental archaeology?
Sure. Experimental archaeology is the study of past technologies, but unlike traditional archaeologists who dig up artifacts and describe them and sort of measure them, We take it a step further. We recreate artifacts that are dug up from out of the ground. And then with our recreations, because those recreations are worthless, we can break them and throw them and use them for experiments and sort of really figure out why these artifacts look the way they do and why they were made the way they were made. What we really do is reverse engineer ancient technologies through the reproductions that we recreate.
And so what is the story of this unusual knife, and what brought it to your attention?
So the story of this very famous knife is that there was an Inuit man, allegedly in the 1950s, who was being moved off of his ancestral homeland by the Canadian government. And his family tried to convince him to come into the igloo and they would leave the next day. And day turned to night and it was really cold, and his family, to convince him to come inside, took away all of his tools and all of his utilities. And so the story goes that this 1950s Inuit man defecated into his own hands. And as his feces froze, he honed the feces into the shape of a knife, which he honed with a spray of saliva. He then killed a dog with that knife. He turned the dog's ribcage into a sled. He used the dog's hide to harness another dog, and he sped off into the night. And I first heard this story when I was a teenager. Wade Davis, the famous ethnobotanist, anthropologist, and National Geographic explorer, told this story to Diane Rehm on NPR. And this was to promote his book, Shadows in the Sun. And this story just blew me away. It really captured my imagination. And when I was a 15-year-old kid, it's really the reason why I went into anthropology. I mean, I think Wade Davis has inspired thousands, if not millions, of people around the world and with his work. And so that's when I first heard the story. And ever since Wade Davis told this story and published this story in 1996, he's told it and retold it, and it's sort of spread and grown, and it's become a part of the scientific and popular literature.
So let's talk process. Scientific experiments usually start with gathering the materials that you want to test. How exactly does one go about procuring a slab of frozen poo?
Well, I think first it's important to realize why we decided to do this test. And, you know, we're always looking for assumptions that have been made in the scientific literature about prehistoric technologies or technologies from the past. And I will never forget when I had this idea to test this idea. I spoke to my co-director, Dr. Michelle Beber, and said, "Hey, I've got a great idea for our next experiment." And she said, "Oh, what is it?" And I said, "Well, do you remember that story that Wade Davis told about the Arctic?" She thought for a moment, and then she said, "Oh my God." And so she knew instantly where we were going to go. So to test that idea, we needed to procure the necessary raw materials to make our knives. And so what I did was I went on a diet that would be considered consistent with an Arctic diet, high in protein and fatty acids and a lot of fish, a lot of meat. And after a few days, making sure that my system was cleared out of a sort of the Western diet I'm used to, I started to regularly produce the raw materials necessary for our knife production. It wasn't easy. It was very difficult. The diet was a lot more difficult than I thought it would be. But we got all the raw materials we needed and collected our samples.
And then once you had the knife in hand, as it were, how well did it perform?
So what we did was we got dry ice, which goes to negative 50 degrees centigrade. And we had initially stored our frozen samples in the freezer. But when it came time for knife production, we wanted to, you know, as best we could replicate Arctic temperatures. And so as we molded our poop knives, we would stick it into the negative 50 degree centigrade dry ice. And I was surprised at how hard feces could get when frozen. And so I actually thought for a while that this might work. I mean, they were really, really hard. Also, we had a few advantages that the Inuit person would not have had. One, we actually had a metal file to sharpen our frozen knives to as sharp as they possibly could get. We also, instead of butchering a dog, which would have been warm, you know, because it would have been freshly killed, we used cold refrigerated meat to butcher. And then on top of that, our meat was hairless. We didn't have to go through any tough hide or hair or anything like that to cut our meat. And we thought, well, this is a very conservative test to sort of see whether or not if a knife can cut through a simple thing just like meat. I thought it would work, but unfortunately, when the time came to use our frozen human poop knives, like a brown crayon, just left streaks.
So basically what you're saying is the knife crapped out.
The knife completely crapped out. You could say that shit didn't cut it.
At the end of the day, was the experiment just a big waste?
No, definitely not. I mean, the goal of experimental archaeology is to test assumptions and hypotheses that people come up with. And, you know, while we're not sure whether this Inuit story actually happened or not, the point is it was out there and it was in the literature. And so it's fair game to be tested. And so we learn something. And so whether a test is successful or not is sort of irrelevant. The key with any science is that you've learned something. And we've learned that under the scientific conditions for our test, knives manufactured of human frozen feces don't work, which does sort of lead us to be skeptical of whether or not that story of the man in the 1950s actually happened or not.
Are there other experiments that you're working on now that you can tell us about?
I mean, we are constantly doing experiments. In 2019, we published 22 papers alone. The year before that, we published 20 papers. We're constantly shooting replica arrows and crushing hide scraping tools and making pots and breaking pots and making metal weapons and forging. And it's a really great group. Everyone involved in the lab is constantly working hard. And so there's just too many things to really talk about.
I've been talking to Metin Aaron, co-director of the Aaron Laboratory of Experimental Archaeology at Kent State. You can read about Dr. Aaron's ongoing research at the lab website. Link is in the show notes. And you can find out more about the saga of the frozen poop knife in the article, What a Waste! Frozen Poop Knives Are Crappy Cutters, on Live Science. Dr. Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Take care.
So one of the more bizarre and pretty gross behaviors of animals has to do with poop. And that brings us to our next mystery. Why do some animals eat their own poop?
This is a big mystery for a lot of people who, especially, if you're a dog owner and you see your dog doing this, because this is a thing that dogs do all the time. And I'm team cat over here.
Cats don't do it.
I am so grateful that all my cats ever do with their poop is bury it. And then get it out of the way. Right. I dog owners, their dogs eat poop and then they kiss them on the mouth. And I just don't know how they do that.
So, to be fair, it's not just dogs. There's lots of animals in the animal kingdom that eat their poop.
No, this is true. This is true. But humans kind of, in general, it's something that we personally do not do. We tend to steer clear of that, and that's mostly for health reasons, right?
Right. Lots of animals do it, and of course, it has its own name, which is coprophagia. It's common. Coprophagia is common among various animals from, the lagomorphs, which include rabbits, hares, and pikas, rodents, which, that doesn't surprise me. We have mice, rats, hamsters. I'm sure my guinea pigs eat their own poop.
oh, my God, that's right. You have guinea pigs.
And they poop all the time.
Oh, yes, they do.
Scientists have found that mountain beavers, baby elephants, hippo calves,
all these cute little baby animals. Little baby poops.
They eat poop. Even non-human primates like gorillas, orangutans, and rhesus monkeys eat their own poop.
Okay, so why do they do it?
For some animals, it helps them access nutrients that they couldn't digest the first time around. And this is pretty interesting. Take rabbits, for example. So rabbits and all lagomorphs are what are called hindgut fermenters. And what that means is that after the food passes through the stomach and the small intestine, it enters their large intestine, and that's where the bacteria causes fermentation, and it breaks down all the tough plant material that they eat. And they have this pouch called a cecum, and that's between the small and large intestine. So, it doesn't sound like a problem so much.
That's how they do it. Okay.
But nutrient absorption, which is how they get the goods from their food, that happens in the stomach and small intestine. So they can't get those. Basically, when they do the nutrient absorption is before they even break down the food.
Ah, okay. So poop eating is just another step in the process of absorbing these nutrients.
Exactly. So that little pouch called the cecum that's between the small and large intestines, it produces something called cecotropes. That's their way of getting nutrients from the food that they've just broken down. So those cecotropes, they're basically poops, they excrete those at nighttime. So hence they're called night feces.
Okay, so how are night feces different from day feces?
So apparently, night feces are dark, soft, and tarry, and so the normal ones are brown and hard, and these are mushy, I guess. And yeah.
So let's say you have a pet rabbit.
Right.
Is the difference between these day feces and night feces something that a non-rabbit owner would recognize? Is it that noticeable?
So they might recognize it, but apparently the rabbits or these other lagomorphs, they eat them straight from their butt. So you're not going to you're going to miss, which is great, you know, because you don't have to. I wish my guinea pigs would eat all their poop, really.
that would save you a lot of time and cleaning.
But in all seriousness, it's how they eat these. It's the pellets or the night feces. It has all the nutrients from their food. And it's how they've evolved to deal with their digestive system.
And I guess it makes sense that they would eat them straight out of the butt because, you know, why would you want to eat something that's been lying on the floor or on the ground?
Fresh night feces.
Yeah, sure. Delicious. So what about other animals? Because some of the other animals that you mentioned before are not hindgut fermenters.
Right.
So what about those animals?
So other animals like the elephant and hippo calves, they eat the feces from their mothers and from fellow herd members. So it's not exactly their own feces. And they do it during a time when they're transitioning from drinking their mother's milk to eating solid foods.
And how does that, what does that do for them?
So we were talking about bacteria earlier mm-hmm. in the gut. And so eating this fecal matter helps the calves, the babies, while they're transitioning, it helps them to establish a healthy bacterial community in their guts. And that helps them with digestion as they start to eat solid foods.
And there's actually some evidence that shows that this is something that has been happening in the elephant lineage, at least for at least tens of thousands of years, right?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. So scientists found a mammoth baby, a young baby that had eaten its mother's dung, basically.
Oh, this is a, how is it pronounced? Is it Liuba? That's that Siberian mummy, the
exactly.
mammoth mummy baby?
Yeah. Exactly. It was 42,000 years old, and they ran an autopsy on this mammoth mummy, and it showed that she had ingested mammoth poop in a similar way to how elephant calves do that today.
It's just amazing that that this mammoth was so well preserved that they were able to do that. I mean, you could I remember seeing pictures of this,
yeah.
and you know, and you could actually see like there was skin, there was hair, and apparently there was still the stomach contents that they were able to actually see what it was that she had been eating. So back to dogs, though, because dogs are the poop eaters that we, I guess, you know.
Know and love.
Well, maybe some of us love them. Actually, no, it's not true. Yeah. I love dogs. I don't love to see the poop eating. But so why do dogs do it?
So apparently they also might turn to poop eating for nutrition, like rabbits, like these other animals. But that's just for, you know, starving and sick dogs. So...
So what about the healthy dogs? Why do healthy dogs eat poo? Because they do it all the time.
That's a good
why
question.
Do they do it?
You know, like your family's golden retriever gets plenty of food from its owners, so it's pretty puzzling that these dogs would eat poop. And it's even more puzzling because typically dogs distance themselves from their own poop and from other dogs' poop.
And that's actually an ancestral trait, right? That's something that scientists also see wolves do, and that's for health reasons.
Right. Wolves, they poop outside of their dens so that they can reduce the risk of infection from parasites in the poop.
Right, and that's why they generally tend to avoid poop from other wolves. So, okay, so then why do dogs do it?
Of course, researchers have studied this. And one study, they to try to get to the bottom of this poop eating, they surveyed 3,000 dog owners about their dogs and their dogs' poop eating habits.
And what did they learn?
So they learned that about 16% of the owners, they said their dogs eat poop, and it wasn't because their dogs needed the nutrients, basically.
So they were saying, you know, so they were like, okay, I know my dog is well fed, and yet somehow they still seem to have a hunger for poop.
Exactly, and they found some interesting things about the poop eating. They found that fecal freshness was a factor in whether the dogs would eat their poop, and they found about 80% said that their dogs only ate the poop that was no more than 2 days old. I guess they turned their noses up at non-fresh poop.
Of course.
So another thing they found was that the poop-eating dogs, there were about 38% every week they ate poop, their owners said, and 62% of them seemed to eat poop every day.
Okay, but what did they find anything out about why the dogs were doing it?
Okay, so it comes back to the wolf ancestors and the parasites hidden inside stools. So usually the parasites are in the larval form when they're inside poop, and they don't become infectious for several days. So these scientists were saying perhaps by eating the feces, the fresh feces, the dogs are sort of doing housekeeping. They're preventing infection you know, they're eating it before these eggs develop, apparently.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that's just one idea.
Right. Okay. But okay. So let's say you're a dog owner and you're just not thrilled with the prospect of your dog eating poop. Is there anything you can do to make them stop?
So that was another sort of unsatisfying conclusion of the study. They found that dogs that fancied feces, they weren't easily deterred to stop. You know, regardless of the method the owners tried, they tried food additives, they tried, you know, punishing the dogs for eating poop or rewarding them for leaving the poop alone. They found that the success rate was just 0 to 4%. So it was pretty tough to get the dogs to stop eating poop once they had started.
So which would suggest that this is a type of behavior that's, you know, something that's fairly deeply ingrained. So if even these methods of either using rewards or using deterrence isn't working, that it's something that, you know, is fairly deeply ingrained in your dog.
Exactly. It's hardwired in some way. While poop eating in dogs is pretty common, humans have learned over the eons to steer clear of feces. That's because disease can spread inside poop, and if it gets unknowingly ingested, it can cause serious problems. And that has become apparent with the current coronavirus outbreak. Amidst this outbreak, scientists have found that one of the modes of transmission is through poop. It's not the primary mode, but it's one of the ways that it can be transmitted to other people. And here to talk to us about this mode of spread is Live Science staff writer Yasmin Saplikoglu. Thanks, Yasmin, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you recently wrote about the possibility of the virus SARS-CoV-2, which is the coronavirus that causes COVID-19, that it can somehow spread through poop. Why did doctors or scientists think to even ask this question?
Well, I think partly why they wanted to kind of investigate this possibility was that there's a large number of cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the new coronavirus, like more than what would be expected from spreading only through respiratory droplets or contact with infected patients, but also because other similar viruses are thought to be able to spread through poop, such as the similar coronavirus that caused severe acute respiratory syndrome outbreak back in 2003. And I think all of this is partly because we don't know much about this new virus. So, you know, everyone's trying to understand more about it. And that involves understanding the various ways that it transmits.
Okay, so what did the scientists do to figure out whether it can spread in this way?
In this particular study, researchers in China, they isolated a virus from a patient who had pretty severe COVID-19. The patient had severe pneumonia. And they examined the virus under a microscope and found that it was actually still viable, meaning that it could still infect people. This was actually not the only study conducted on this. There were others that also found this virus could be present in feces, but most of those studies kind of didn't know if it could still infect other people or not.
Okay. So speaking to that, if, you know, I think of these teensy tiny virus particles and they're inside poop, how does that get into another person and spread the virus?
Yeah. So a person who, for example, goes to the bathroom and then doesn't wash their hands properly or, you know, doesn't wash their hands at all could carry the virus on their hands and then touch surfaces, shake hands with other people, cook food, you know, contaminate all these different things just because they had it on their hands. But I think it is important to note that it seems that it's possible that this new coronavirus could spread through poop. It's not, you know, the primary way that it spreads. It mostly spreads through respiratory droplets that can be released when a person coughs or sneezes or even, you know, talks too close for comfort next to you.
So I guess the take-home message for both of these modes is basically to wash your hands.
Yes, definitely. I think the major thing is to wash your hands for at least 20 seconds and kind of don't touch your face, don't touch your mouth, don't touch your eyes or nose, disinfect surfaces. And so this study with this report, which was published by the Chinese Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they recommended to avoid consuming kind of raw food, which could be contaminated, or boiling water before drinking it, if people have concerns that it could be contaminated.
I've been talking with Yasmin Saplikoglu, staff writer at Live Science. You can check out her article, New Coronavirus May Spread Through Poop, on Live Science. The link is in the show notes. Thanks for joining us, Yasmin.
Thanks for having me.
So we've talked about how disease can be spread through poop, animals that eat their poop, how coffee can make a person poop, and also about how, you know, people poop every day. Of course, the quantities of poop that an individual can produce can vary depending on your, you know, your body weight, your diet, your exercise, all these other factors. But one thing is true for all people is that over the course of a lifetime of pooping, that can all really add up. So that brings us to our last mystery, which is how much do you poop in your lifetime?
So poop is all the extra stuff that's left over from what we drink, what we eat. And after the body absorbs all the nutrients it needs to keep our bodies running, we poop the rest out.
Right, right. Poop is usually made up of about 70% solids and 30% fluids. So to figure out how much a person could potentially poop over the course of their lifetime, we need to start by looking at how much does the average person poop, you know, in a single day? And so obviously this is something that there's a lot of individual variation, but on average, both men and women move their bowels about once a day and produce about 14 to 17 ounces of feces, which is about 400 to 500 grams.
One sort of fun fact, researchers even figured out how fast humans poop. Apparently, we poop about 0.8 inches or 2 centimeters per second. So we spend about 12 seconds per stool.
But that's actually something that's uniform across animal species, regardless of their size. And I presume the size of their poops, because, you know,
that matters.
Right.
Or
yeah,
the shape, perhaps.
Okay. So, all right. So 14 to 17 ounces, that doesn't sound like a lot, right? But yeah, I guess once you start looking at, you know, days, weeks, and years of a lifetime, that's when it really starts to add up.
Okay, so let's look at 1 year.
Okay.
So if we take that 14 to 17 ounces, after 1 year, the average person would have pooped out about 312 pounds.
142 kilograms. That's a lot of poop.
Yeah.
That's okay.
And that's 1 year, one person.
That's like two people-sized piles.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. All right, so that's after 1 year, just 1 year. So what about by age 21?
So by age 21, scientists figured out you would have pooped out more than 6,500 pounds, which is nearly 3,000 kilograms of poop.
Wow. Okay.
So now the numbers are adding up.
So
we're
now,
seeing
right,
sort of how this is going.
The piles are starting to accumulate.
Exactly.
Okay. So now let's jump ahead to age 65. So what have you got then?
65, that adds up to 20,280 pounds.
And which is just over 9,000 kilograms.
Yeah.
Okay. And then by the time you get to like 83 years old,
yeah,
then
so
what are we looking
right
at?
Right. So if you know an 83-year-old, they will have pooped about almost 26,000 pounds of poop, which is more than 11,500 kilograms of stool.
Okay. So that's almost 26,000 pounds of poop produced by one person. So
right.
Let's do something really terrifying and scale that up. So what does that mean for how much poop is produced by all the people in the world in a single year?
Okay. So these numbers start to get to, you know, it's
absolutely
hard
terrifying
to even imagine, but that number would be 640 billion pounds or 290 billion kilograms.
Okay. And that's a number that's so big it's almost hard to imagine what that means. So What does that mean? How much is that?
Well, to put it maybe into a little bit of perspective, let's think about Fort Knox, where we store our gold. Fort Knox holds a little more than 9.2 million pounds or 4.2 million kilograms of gold.
Okay, so you'd have to scale that up by a substantial number to get even close to the amount of poop that's produced
exactly
by all the people in the
exactly
world in 1 year. Okay, and but the thing is, it's like, you know, obviously it's not just people who are pooping. So if you want to think about the impacts of poop on the world, let's look at dogs again.
Oh,
so
yeah,
how much poop are produced by all the pet dogs in the world?
Right, and if they're
year
not eating their poop, then we...
If they're not eating it, right, of course.
Apparently, there's about 83 million pet dogs just in the U.S., and they poop out about 10.6 million tons of waste every year. So you can imagine with 7.7 billion people across the globe, why all this poop could create some issues.
And of course, access to proper sanitation is not something that is equally distributed around the world. So about 4.5 billion people worldwide don't have access to household toilets that can safely dispose of their waste,
which can create problems with disease. Every year, millions of people are affected by disease outbreaks that are linked to this poor sanitation.
Right. Now, but of course, you know, the flip side of this is obviously there are, you know, plenty of animals that are just pooping in the wild all day, every day. And this is actually something that is a really important part of food webs in the wild. And so we mentioned that earlier. And obviously, the biggest animals on the planet that produce the most poop in a single go, they are actually, because of that, they are actually really, really important for feeding entire communities, especially
right.
in the ocean.
Right. And in 2012, a marine biologist actually captured a visual of this, and it really sort of gave an image of just how huge these poops are from blue whales particularly. And he shot an aerial image of a plume of poop from a blue whale, and the image suggests, it shows the poop that extending almost the length of the entire blue whale, basically.
Yeah.
So it poops it out, it's on the surface, and it almost looks like another blue whale next to this.
Right. And what happens, and because blue whales and all whales, they tend to poop at the surface, because they feed down near the ocean bottom, what that does is the food that is absorbed and processed and then, you know, ejected in their poo, it actually contains nitrogen that is otherwise not accessible to animals, ocean animals that live at the surface. So by these whales feeding down there, absorbing these nutrients and then pooping them out at the surface, they're actually able to spread them around so that more animals are able to share the bounty.
We actually talked about this in another one of our Life's Little Mysteries episodes.
Yes, that was actually our very first episode about ocean mysteries. So if you want to find out more about whale poo, we talk about that at great length. And you can also read about that on Live Science in the article, How Much of the Ocean is Whale Pee and More.
Thanks for joining us today for Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science.
All of today's poop mysteries, why does coffee make you poop? Why do some animals eat their poop? And how much do you poop in your lifetime? Are available as Life's Little Mysteries articles on our website, livescience.com. You can also find out more about these mysteries in this podcast's notes.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more Life's Little Mysteries and for the latest science news. You can also join the conversation in our Live Science forums, where you can pose Life's Little Mysteries questions of your own, or even suggest topics for upcoming podcast episodes.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes.
What will we talk about next? It's a mystery.
Literally, it'll be another Life's Little Mystery.
Life's Little Mysteries is produced in conjunction with Audioboom as part of their Audioboom Originals network.